Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the QU Podcast. I am today's host, Wyatt Randolph. Just wanted to give a little introduction to the podcast today. I'm interviewing Jeff Dorsey and Sarah Dian. Both of these wonderful speakers have had extensive time on live radio and in local news broadcasting, and they have a story to tell. And so I brought them in today for them to discuss their vast careers in the communication community here in Quincy, and they gave some stellar advice to some of the new students getting into the communication field. So let's get right into the interview. All right, I'd like to welcome two very special guests today, two veterans in the communication community here at in Quincy, Jeff Dorsey and Sarah Dian.
Sarah Dian. That's right.
I've been practicing it on my own, and then you told it to me the first time, and I'm like, I've been practicing wrong. So today is already going good.
You're not the first to get that wrong.
Yeah.
I am
so glad to be interviewing you two today.
Thank you.
Well, we're glad to be here.
Yeah, radio has obviously been a big part of the Quincy community, and we get that here in the communication department at QU because a lot of our equipment is used from other studios and things like that. So we have those connections, and they're very inspiring, and so it's great to actually have you guys here in the studio.
Well, we're happy to be here, and your equipment is nicer than anything we even use.
Yeah, really? You have any openings here?
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, if only I got paid. Yeah, that was the one thing.
I often felt the same way, yeah. Wyatt.
It didn't stop us.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Well, I do want to get into that, your time at Y101. What exactly, compared to when you started, Mr. Dorsey, to when Sarah came in, what changed in the when it comes to the equipment? Because you said it wasn't this nice. Was it always a certain way, or was it changed constantly?
It's a gradual change with technology. Obviously, you know, the computer systems upgraded all the time.
Of course,
we went digital, and it didn't affect me very much being on the air. But, you know, when we had to, I didn't run the control board for the first 15 years I was there, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I did periodically, but because my co-host at that time, Dennis Oliver, did that. But, you know, we'd have to keep up on all the technological advances that were being made. And there were quite a few of them, little at a time for the most part. And once you get established in how to do things, all of a sudden they change the system.
Yeah.
And they brought another system in that they thought would be better, beneficial for the stations that they own, because they try to synchronize all the stations with the same type of equipment. Mm. And they own so many of them, where Town Square Media eventually was the owner. They have like 350 plus radio stations in America. So they're trying to synchronize all of the stations so they can help everybody do things for each other.
Yeah.
And economize the personnel and everything else. So, you know, it changed dramatically from point I started to when I ended, but it was all gradual along the way.
Yeah. So,
well, he had back in the day when I would come visit you in your studio, you know, 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had carts that you,
this was Y101 we were talking about.
Well,
if you want to go back to when I first came,
it's dramatically different.
Goodness. You can't believe the changes that were. I don't know if you want to get into that now, or is that something?
Oh, no, that's totally fine.
When I came here in 1978, and I came into a studio that had huge turntables.
Oh, really?
Okay,
yeah.
And we had actually had 78 records that we would play.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
The armatures on those things with the needle were heavy.
Yeah.
You know, and you'd get the place, and then you, what do we call, back cue it.
Yeah.
So you'd find where the song started. And then you would back cue it, so when you push the button, it would come up to speed, so it would start and sound like it's supposed to sound.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it sounded real groggy at first, and then it got up to speed.
Of course.
So, I mean, those were some of the antiquated, that's one of the pieces that we used years ago. We used to have carts that had commercials on them.
Right.
Two tracks, I think they call them.
Uh-huh.
And you had one commercial. If you screwed it up as you recorded it, you had to do it all over again because there was no editing on those things until you did 30 seconds or 60 seconds correctly.
Of course.
You could put it on a reel-to-reel and then try to dub it over to it, and then you had to splice and cut the tape and put it together and all that kind of stuff.
Like literally splice and cut.
You
and
did
tape.
Surgery on it.
Yes, you did.
You know, you take one word out of it, and where's that? You got to mark it, and you cut it and splice and tape it, and then you put it together that way. So there's a lot of changes that have happened over the years in radio since I started.
Yeah, and Sarah, when you were at KHQA, did that... did you see that switch to digital while you were there?
Yes, I did.
And how is that compared to the radio you just described?
it actually very much the same. You know, we dealt with video, he dealt with audio. But, you know, in the early days, just the sheer size of the equipment was so big so heavy. And we were one-man bands, and you carried it all by yourself. And when it came to scripts, you would type them out on carbon paper and literally cut and tape them together and put them on a machine for your teleprompter.
It's like a conveyor belt.
Yeah, it was like a conveyor belt. And it would often go off track. And so, I mean, the differences are amazing. And just because of the size of everything now is so much more convenient.
Right.
And researching things, just, you know, you've got your phone. It was a difficult transition for an old-timer like me, but, man, so much improved as far as technology goes. It's really amazing. I'm not sure that the whole news-gathering process and that kind of thing is better. In fact, I think it's worse. You're doing more with fewer people. I think that's definitely been a downfall. But at the same time, technology-wise... just leaps and bounds of improvement.
Yeah. No, I definitely understand what you mean. Less people in the studio makes it harder to collaborate with people and have fewer hands on stuff. So I do understand that because you can do most of the things from your personal computer these days. So we were talking earlier about podcasting and how that's taking over. That it's because everyone can do it with cheaper equipment than you'd think. It's
for sure.
You'd think they'd be thousands and thousands of dollars, but most of that's just markup for name brands. You can just get off brand. It's much better. So, going back to your time at the TV station, you said big equipment.
Yes.
Were you a field reporter? So I've had to work with some of the cameras that we have from Quincy College.
Yeah.
And they hurt my back.
Yes.
Just trying to like, all right, let me get a little test. Okay, gonna put that down. Because it's already too much.
Yeah. And like I said, you were a one-man band. So we had, at that time, a big deck that we carried. Okay. And then you had the camera. And then you had the tripod, which the tripods were massive because the cameras were so massive.
Right.
And, you know, then the light stand. You've seen me walking through with all this stuff.
Yeah, I'm surprised you don't have a bad back from all this.
Yeah.
I have a bad back, but not necessarily because of that.
It didn't help, but,
14 broken bones and a four-wheeler accident will do it,
too. Yeah, I did see that. You're better now?
I'm fine. Yeah. I'm fine. But anyway, I mean, it was physically... kind of demanding, you know, and I was a lot littler back then.
Well, even
day.
For a guy my size, it was tough to carry all, lug all that out, you know, so, you know, it's a little better, but I've seen some cameras that are still pretty large that they use today, and then I've seen little ones too, so depending on what you use.
Gosh, so. Now, I in some ways, quality isn't even as important because they don't shy away from Zoom interviews and even just cell phone videos. We get used to seeing that on our own phones, and they're more comfortable now in TV news to use that stuff during their broadcasts.
Yeah, you know? I remember early on you weren't allowed to show any like up down on TV, and then they changed that because people are like, that's a real person out there with their phone. Yeah,
right.
So I do understand that. I was listening to the Mud River podcast, and you were talking about the format change that led to you leaving the studio. Were there any other big format changes in the past that were like, oh, maybe this isn't right, like, to stay here? Or was that the first big thing? It's like, all right, it's over.
Well, you know, when you get in the, first of all, when I started, it was difficult to get in the business.
Yes.
If you were lucky to get your foot in the door, you took it.
Okay. And someone just heard you speaking, right? And they were like, I need him on the studio.
I was actually doing a play-by-play at a game, high school basketball or football game it was, and in Harrisonville, Missouri. And the general manager here, Gary Schmetting, had, I think his mother was living in suburban Kansas City. So he was over visiting, and he happened to put the radio on, and he heard me, heard my voice and the whole bit. And he was looking for a play-by-play guy, and he was looking for an announcer.
Yeah.
And when he called me, he said, do you do any announcing? I said, well, yeah, I do a morning show, too, at the station as well. He didn't get to hear that part of it, but that's how it clicked for both of us. I didn't apply for the job to come here.
Yeah.
And I had worked there for 4 years, and it just happened that he heard me, and there you go. Yeah. But to get in the door, it was very difficult.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, as a young guy, I'm trying to find my first job in radio. You have to have experience. Come back later when you get experience. Well, where am I going to get that?
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, so you do whatever you can do. Well, I found out, you know, that there's a gentleman building a radio station in suburban Kansas City, and I went to and I bugged him to death.
Yeah.
I did everything but help build a radio station.
Yeah.
At least in my mind. I offered at least.
Yeah.
And I said, if you need anything, I'll be here. You know, and I'd go down there. Well, it'll be like 6 more months. Well, I was down there in 30 days again. How are we doing? He knew I wanted the job. Yeah. And you have to be persistent if you want to get in the position. Even today, you got to do this.
Of course.
Whether you have experience or not. And you got to display you really want this job. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of people who still want to be in the business. Yeah. They don't have positions available. So when one opens up, you got to take it.
Yeah. When I first was thinking about coming to Quincy, I was excited because there was a radio station here on campus.
Yes.
Well, it was at the main campus, and it shut down as soon as I arrived, which was very sad. But that seemed to be a common theme going on now. It's like radio. It's like since they're downsizing, they only need like one guy and a computer to make sure they follow all the trendy song formats and say the right words, and then go, and then he gets paid, and then studios. Like,
I didn't answer your question of the format.
Oh, so sorry.
I kind of got off of that tangent here a little bit about that. But format changes are important to a lot of people. I mean, you'll be happier at a format you like.
Of course, yeah.
But most people who get in the business don't have that option. If you don't like country, and there's a lot of country jocks that are out there who don't like country.
Really?
But they'll play it because that's their job. And they'll find, once they're in, then they can go to the stations that do what they like and try to get positions there. And it makes life a little better for you every day to go to work. But there's so much more than being on the air. I mean, a lot of people think you're there from, 6 in the morning to 10 and whatever, and then the rest of your day you're off. But no, you're doing a lot of other things.
Only if you're Sarah Dyan.
Yeah, you're the only one. And even then you didn't work 6 to 10.
No.
I had to wake her up and say, you awake?
It's time.
You're on in 15 minutes. But anyway, that's the format changes are important to people staying maybe, but, you still want the job.
Yeah.
The jobs are not easy to find.
You know, as far as getting a job and getting your foot in the door, internships are the way to go.
Of course.
You can score an internship somewhere, that is your foot in the door. And even if it doesn't lead to a job at that station, at least you have a tape.
Yeah.
Do you send off tapes?
That's anymore?
You don't send off tapes anymore, do you? But
you make kind of a reel. You can put it on LinkedIn, I think people still use. But, of course, social media is the biggest thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all about getting that real-world experience, which is what's great for you here at QU, because you do get that because you do have a studio. And
it's very rare actually get this kind of equipment just off the bat. So you're right. That's very, it's very opportunistic for us. And it's easy. I think it's easier now to learn how to do it than it was. Like you said, it took a lot of people to run it. Mm-hmm. And now my prep for this podcast was set up the recording software and then just turn up the mics, make sure everything's clean. and then we're on the air, and then it's a matter of uploading. Back in the day, I know that a young guy coming in, I bet when you were like, I want this job, you still didn't know everything about it, but your excitement to work was enough to get you started. And I think that's still what everybody wants. At first they're like, I just want the job. But I think it is easier to learn it now. So it might be a little oversaturated, but I'm excited people like it because yeah. I love the amount of podcasts and news broadcasts and stuff that are still like that I can just access from my phone. I love them being connected.
So. You've got a lot of exciting opportunities for you at your age, and I think that's wonderful.
Just get as much experience as you can get.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's the I practiced in my basement for probably a year and a half.
Yeah.
Really?
I had my own little DJ thing going on down there. Probably drove my parents nuts. You know, because I played music too loud or whatever.
You were a radio nerd.
I wanted to be in radio since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
A real little kid. So I'm fortunate I got to do what I want to do in my lifetime. Most people can't say that.
Yeah, that is definitely manifestation from a young age.
So when I stepped into that first job, I said, well, this is like being in my basement. No. But it was.
You were prepared. You were ready.
And my first job was to broadcast. We had a big band show for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know anything about big bands.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew about rock and roll, okay?
Yeah.
You know, and the names of some of these orchestra leaders, I couldn't pronounce, so I'd pick up the phone, call my dad, and why do you say this?
Yeah.
You know, this is how you gotta do your homework. Call your dad.
Well, yeah, true. He was my Google man then. So anyway, that's, back to the format, certainly never expected to do something big band show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's how I started.
Yeah, it's so impressive, the adaptability in the show.
You have to be.
Yeah.
Listen, and with a voice like he has. I mean, big, sexy voice like that. I mean,
whatever.
It didn't matter what he was talking about. Everyone's like, yes, tell me more.
No, yeah. That voice. He's got such a voice.
I definitely hear it. It's mm-hmm. When you hear him, it's like, even if you haven't heard his show before, uh-huh. it's like I have because I'm like, oh, it's so like.
I know.
In the moment, it pulls you in.
Well, and that's the thing. Oh, my gosh. You see, when people first get in the business and they put on the voice, it drives me crazy.
Yeah, they come in like, welcome back, and it's really not really their voice.
And they're talking like this, and it's just ridiculous. And I think the key to success in radio and TV and in life, really, is just be you. And being you is good enough. Yeah. You know, and so let your personality show. Don't put on airs. Just go out there and be yourself and do your thing, you know, like it or lump it. Yeah. And
well, Sarah, that was well said.
Now back to the weather. Yeah.
I had to do it.
But, you know, he talks on the radio like he talks to me when we just had breakfast before this, you know?
And yeah, but it's almost like he talks to you like he's a radio host. He's always on.
But he's not. That's just him.
I have more people come up to me and say, you're Jeff, aren't you?
You're somebody.
Yeah. And I go, well, yeah.
I don't know who you
they
are.
They heard the voice. They heard me talking to somebody, and mm-hmm. the voice gives me away.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's...
It's very iconic.
It is, isn't it?
Because my voice can't get that deep, you know, just I have to really try, you know.
Well, don't.
I know. But,
that's
and
the
so,
point. Don't
and there
try.
Are so many people who try to emulate that kind of radio deep voice that you just have naturally.
This resonance I have now, I've had most of my life, obviously. Uh-huh. But I didn't have it when I started. When I was going to college, I was driving mm-hmm. back and forth 30 minutes, you know, to school. Yeah. And every day I did two voice exercises. I would go to the school by going for like as long as I could do it and kept doing it. When I came back, it was ooh, and these are voice exercises that made it make you more resonant.
Wow.
So it worked for me.
I have to start that.
It's Oz and Ooze.
Wow.
It's very simple to do, and it did for me at least. It worked.
I had no idea I thought I knew everything there was to know about you.
Well, you don't.
Good golly.
Man, that
this
was
is news to me.
This is the prize advice right here.
This is news to me.
I'm not saying it's going to work for everybody, but it worked for me. So.
Yeah, it just shows you were so dedicated so early that you were getting the voice ready. That's so amazing.
I find I lack total dedication. Yeah.
It makes me just feel worthless. I'm like, I never just practice voice exercises. What am I doing?
So you were never prepared for a radio business? Oh.
You saw how much I prepared.
Yeah, I noticed that.
I mean, even during the show. What I've always relied on for me is just being me. I mean...
That's all you need.
I mean, You like it or you don't. People, so I never did. I never prepared for a
people
show.
Can read right through you. Uh-huh. They really can. So. Just from listening to you, they can tell. I can tell when somebody isn't who they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And then when you meet them in person, you can tell. You know that when you meet somebody in person.
Yeah.
No different than listening to them on the radio.
Yeah.
So you might as well be who you are, because if that's not good enough, you'll find something someplace where it will be good enough. But for the most part, if you are who you are, you don't have to worry about that part of things. You got other things to worry about.
Yeah.
For me in radio, I always did a little better, I think, than on TV, because TV was so much script, right? And you're reading a lot. And it's hard to read and try to sound like you're not reading, because you really do need to do that. You need to try to talk to somebody rather than read at somebody.
Right.
And I always tried to read that way, but that's not easy to do. I do much better, I think, off the cuff. I really do. I mean,
improvisation is, in my opinion, is much easier. I've tried the teleprompter. We have the full news studio here, and one day they were like, "Wyatt, you should try to read for the weather," and that. For some reason, just the fact that I'm on camera, I have to read this, I have to speak, that was a little wild for me, and so I was like freezing. But
and get it done in a certain amount of time.
Yeah, oh, that's the worst part, is the time frame. Oh, my gosh. And you have to get it right, because then if everything goes wrong, it's like, all right, we got to redo the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, and to look at the camera and to see through the camera to the people that you're broadcasting to is another, you know, kind of trick of the trade that a lot of people can't get. But, I mean, you've got to make that connection. So, like, if I was anchoring alongside, say, Chad Douglas or Matt Schmidt or whoever, I would try to interact with the camera like I was talking to them, you know. So it is about just, you know,
Tell them the story of it that you told me about. You would have a script and you wouldn't read. Wouldn't follow the script the way it was, and the director got mad.
The directors liked me personally, hated me on the air.
Yeah.
Because I would use a script as a general guideline about things that I was supposed to say. I never followed the cues. And if I had a director who got me, who was on the same wavelength, they would know when to roll and when to come back to camera, and we'd have a really good flow, and it felt organic and natural and real. But if you had a director, especially trying to break somebody in, I was their worst nightmare, because I just don't do scripts very well.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Yeah,
yeah.
I think the adaptability of people, like if you get find people you can work with, that would work. But we're taught here to, you know, make a script and follow it pretty closely. Even with the podcast this last year, we were required to have a script. I, of course,
a script for a podcast,
like what we have to talk about and stuff like that. It was starting to sound like it was getting more strict, and I immediately did not do that. And I still think I got some pretty good work out of it. I interviewed one guy about the chronic wasting disease in Missouri.
Yeah.
And for some reason, that's been liked by more people than like any of the other like more lighthearted things I've
They're
done.
They're interested in chronic wasting. Yeah, deer, we're talking about.
Deer. Yeah. I had a...
I'll be darned.
He says he's a novice, but he's been hunting his whole life, and he makes his own jerky. And so I introduced him as an expert, and he liked that. But we talked kind of off the cuff about it, but I had my research next to me, but the topics were him, like, bringing it up and things like that. And I like that format more. Mm-hmm. And the television, like, following the script, I think, is not the right direction.
Me too.
Anything in the five years of work.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, when you guys had guests and stuff like that, how would you prepare for the radio? Like, things, like, in that, how is the prep done for the radio?
Well, if they're in studio or on the phone, I would, what questions would you like me to ask you?
Okay.
Okay, but two or three of them, they would tell me what they, and we'd make sure we cover that. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, it was just wherever the conversation went, we went with it.
Okay.
As far as the
and
two of
us.
And
we also just kind of expected our guests to go on the fly, too, with us, because
they know their business better than we do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my philosophy.
So I can't sit here and tell you, you know, why the car's running the way it's running. Like, the auto mechanic will be on. Let him talk about that.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
That kind of thing. So, you know, that's how it works. With our shows, we never, we talk to each other like a minute before we went on the air almost, make sure she was in Hannibal ready to go and I'm ready to go here.
Yeah.
And then it was, you know, anything you want, we just do it.
Yeah. We had segments, and so we knew during those segments, you know, that we'd be talking people stories or whatever. Right. So just kind of weird things that somebody had gotten up to. And so, you know, Dorsey would have that. And then, I mean, I wouldn't know. I never wanted to know what the people story was going to be about, right? Because I wanted to have my just natural reaction to morons in the news kind of thing.
Well, the spontaneity of it makes it work.
Definitely. Yeah.
If I was to tell her, this guy jumped out of a plane and landed on a trampoline or something, something stupid like that, you know. She'd have something. She'd be working up some response to that. And we didn't want to do that.
Yeah. No, I understand.
We had a guy. Oh. A guy who would fill in when Dorsey was gone. And it was awful. And
Don't incriminate yourself.
You could hear the irritation in my voice in the 2 hours that I would be on with him. And I would, you know, and I would try to hide this irritation. And it did not work, did it, Dorsey?
No.
Oh, and so he would try to script out. So he'd have people stories. And he would like script a punchline for me. And it made me insane. I'm like, I cannot
Or a setup line for him.
Yes. Yeah, it was awful. Yeah. And I just, you know, I dreaded.
I could tell the difference in her.
Uh-huh.
When listening to those shows, that was when I had, COVID. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was gone for a while. And you two were doing the show without me.
That's the longest days of my life.
Well, that was the longest weeks of my life, too. But I'd be listening to the show at home. And I could tell she is so irritated right now because she wasn't talking, for one thing.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't let me
She
talk.
Just like, just calm as could be. But I could tell that her teeth were just grinding in
it. He'd be texting me all throughout the show.
How about that smile?
Oh, God.
Well, having chemistry with whoever you're on air with is all the difference in the world.
Right.
It really does.
Huge.
It makes or breaks it, you know?
Yeah, because I knew her when you came out of college and joined Channel 7. I was actually doing sports on TV in Channel 7, I think, when you came. And radio as well, between both. And, you know, you went your TV way, I went my radio way. We really didn't run into each other very often for the next decade or so.
Yeah.
But we knew each other, you know. And, you know, all of a sudden when we had the opening come up and she got offered the opportunity and she took it, I was really happy to see, because personality is everything. You can tell from her personality she's going to be perfect on radio.
Yeah. So you knew back then, you was like.
Definitely.
Like, I got to convince her to come on.
I didn't have to. Matter of fact, it wasn't me who brought her on, as a matter of fact.
I know. When I found that out, I was a little disappointed.
I didn't want her.
He regretted it from the day I came on the air.
That's not true at all.
I've had co-anchors that I didn't have a connection with at all. And it makes the show go long for me. I can't imagine what it felt like at home because just didn't have any chemistry, you know?
Yeah. So you didn't have any autonomy with picking who you worked with or anything?
It's all based on
we know that we want this person, we want this person, work together, and then they just leave you to it?
Yeah, that's how it goes.
Okay.
You're stuck with me, too.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
Yeah, I've... it's funny because recently I've just been doing research on other radio, like reasons people left radio, basically, and a lot of it is chemistry on with the person you're on the air with. You know, you have so much problems with them, and they get built up over the years. Even if it's just you're supposed to have just a professional relationship, it can build up, and so people will leave for those reasons a lot. And then the other one would be format changes, going digital or downsizing, of course. So. I feel like you guys took a path that was of course challenging, but it was very rewarding in the end. Mm-hmm. And I hope that people can still find that in radio.
She had the toughest assignment that most people would ever have. I worked with Dennis Oliver for 15 years. Okay,
yes.
I've known Dennis forever. We're best friends,
of course.
And when Dennis was going to leave, we knew his days were going to be coming to an end. That we had to find somebody. Well, we found Sarah. Well, Sarah kind of blended in between the two of us and worked her way into the show early.
Okay.
We kind of meshed it all together. So when Dennis would be gone, she would kind of just slide right in.
Wow.
But the fact that she took over for Dennis Oliver, who was a legend in radio broadcasting around here, is no easy price. I mean, when Jack Carney left at KMOX in St. Louis, Mike Murphy, who was the number one, Mike Murphy was the Jack Carney of Kansas City. I mean, he was the number one guy in Kansas City radio forever. He left there to take the St. Louis job, probably for more money, obviously.
Yeah.
But he didn't succeed in St. Louis.
Right.
To take over for, you just don't replace people like that.
Right.
Yeah.
It's very difficult, but she did an outstanding job.
And we knew that Dennis was, of course, leaving under difficult circumstances for health issues, and he didn't want to go. Nobody wanted him to go, but it got to the point where he just couldn't do the job. So we did, you know, kind of this threesome on the show for a while, if you will. But when Dennis left, I never did try to be.
You couldn't be.
I didn't try to be a Dennis Oliver, and you didn't try to replicate the show that you had with Dennis.
We kept a few parts of the same show, but for the most part.
I mean, like segments, but.
It became your own thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it had to because. Yeah.
It was more music-oriented with Dennis and me.
Okay.
It became more conversational with the two of us.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, we had a different audience. I mean, Dennis and I appealed to a lot of people. But we were both males, okay?
Yeah.
She brought up the female perspective of things that I would never bring up, okay?
Of course.
Wouldn't know anything
about. I brought up a lot of things he would rather not have brought up. That was kind of my trademark.
So your listener pool just must have expanded very wide after that.
Just a different.
Yeah. Well, we added people. More with her coming on board. I don't think anybody.
Well, he says that, but he just means my family.
Well, that's adding a lot. A large family. So, but, you know, you had the audience that followed Dennis and me for years, okay? Mm-hmm. And then Sarah came on board, and she brought her audience with it.
Yeah.
You know, and developed an audience really more than anything else because she wasn't on radio for a long time or ever, really.
No,
right?
I hadn't.
And, it was television.
Television, but they knew her from TV. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the personality there just exuded right through the radio.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. When I was doing research on Sarah, all of it is praises from her TV career. It's and reporting and things like that. So it was coming from that, and then also a successful radio career. That is impressive. So we're kind of running out of time here, guys.
Already?
I wanted to ask.
See, it goes fast when you're having fun.
I know. I could let you guys go though, like for hours.
Well,
I feel like
we could go for hours.
And I just cut that up, and that's my project. Yeah. But I do have to ask one question. What do you think was the most memorable moment for each of you in the radio communication community around Quincy and during your career? What was the biggest moment?
Well, for me, it was getting to interview Bill Clinton when he was president during the flood of 93. I was working at WGM then.
Yeah.
And there was four of us five of us, I think, that had a chance to ask a question. And, you know, we got Air Force One. He's flying in to fly over the area to look at the floods that were going on here.
Oh, so you got him on the phone then?
So he was on the phone in Air Force One, and we expected the phone call because the secretary called, the press secretary, said he's going to be calling your station around 10 o'clock or whatever. So we were all anxious, and each one of us decided to ask one question so we could all get the opportunity to talk to him. And, you know, I got I don't even know what my question was, but, you know, it was the excitement of him calling was kind of really cool at that time. It would still be any time, really, when you get a president of the United States. Yeah. So we had fun with that. And Bob Turek, who was a legend over at WGM, asked the question, and he started asking, and then the phone dropped off. Whether the plane had turbulence or whatever, I don't know. And Bob says in his deep voice that he had, "We've lost the president." and I jumped in. I said, "Bob, now you have
this
to remember.
This is going Orwellian on here."
Yeah. Our broadcast was going, to ABC Radio News. It was going through Mutual Radio. It was going all over the world and the country. And he just makes this comment, "We've lost the president." And it's like, I jumped in very quickly and said, "Well, Bob, we actually lost the phone line to the president." And hopefully, and we got to reestablish quickly after that. But oh my gosh,
he was not shot down.
Oh my gosh,
it was. We just kind of looked at it and just giggled it for a minute. Like, you didn't just say that, did you?
That is amazing. That is like War of the Worlds. Like everyone's like, what?
Those people jumping out of windows.
We lost the president. Oh my gosh.
Anyway. Covering those big events
are primary.
They're really memorable.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton came here, it was the day after his State of the Union address. So there was a lot of buzz in the media about what he said in the State of the Union. And, you know, so, and of course, as president, the media is going to follow him wherever he goes. But I covered that for KHQA when he was in Quincy. And then again, when President Obama came to Quincy, to the Civic Center. And those kind of things are, well, they're nerve-wracking.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
You are way out of your element here. But they're also a lot of fun. They're exciting. As far as the day-to-day stuff goes, though, those are the people I remember. They're just the stories of people that I've talked to over the years. Just getting to know someone through their story. And I think storytelling is what it's about as a journalist. And listening to people's story and getting to know them. It was the day to day stuff. That stuff.
Yeah.
And the other stuff, like covering a city council meeting, that was the drudgery. That you endured to get to you know, talk to the guy about deer wasting.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And just kind of, I don't know. That's what I liked about it.
I was actually the summer one job opportunity I was offered was to go into like. I don't know exactly if it was like what kind of politics it was, but it's like when they discuss like what bills or whatever they'd be passing, I'd be writing down everything to give to like a local newspaper journal thing.
Sure.
And I was looking into that and it seems easy, but I looked at how long these, you know, meetings about, or I don't know what they're called. Politics is hard for me, but the, you know, when they're in session, how long they're there.
Yeah.
I was like, I'd have to be there the whole time. How much am I getting paid? You know, I do see that there are these steps you got to take that would be drudge.
And yes. You know? Moments of sheer drudgery. Sitting through a trial, by the way, you see the exciting highlights.
The big trial, like, but everyone's covering.
Even the biggest trials, you sit through a whole lot of, I mean, like, trying not to nod off. You
yeah,
know, there's,
just lawyer litigation.
It's just, yes, drudgery is a really good word for
plenty
it.
Of plenty of times where you do things you don't want to do.
Yep. Yeah.
But you got to suck it up and be a professional and do it. Mm-hmm. They used to send me out in a big motorhome and go report on the fact that it was snowing.
Uh-huh.
You know, WGM had this radio broadcast thing in their truck. And they'd send me out there and, you know, it's snowing at 24th and Broadway. Okay. And then I'd be at the,
still snowing.
On a road report or something. And then they'd say, let's go to Jeff Dorsey. Hell, I'm out here at 36th and Broadway. It's still snowing
still
here.
Snowing. Yeah,
it's still snowing.
And they got paid. I mean, they were sponsors for this. So,
oh, my God.
So they made money. But I'm going, I'm risking my life. I'm telling people stay off the road and I'm driving all over the place.
Yeah.
You know,
oh,
so,
man, yeah.
You know, those kind of things I didn't care to do. Just no. Like, you know, how can you make snowfall exciting? Okay.
I know you got to wrap up, but one other thing that I wanted to throw out there is that one of the best ways that you can prepare, I think, for being on air is it's just a broad knowledge of a lot of different topics because you don't know if you're going to be talking – I don't know, CRP with a farmer, or if you're going to be on the floor of the state house or what. I mean, there's just so much news out there and so many topics. And, you know, just being a well-rounded, well-read person, I think really helps if you're in the news. If you're in the radio, on the radio, having the big sexy voice like Jeff Dorsey, that helps. But
got to be able to talk about something with it.
Yeah, and having a personality.
So. Oh, man.
Yeah,
that's
preparation.
My takeaway.
Preparation.
Yeah, preparation.
Yeah, you were saying that to the other students.
Yeah, I was talking to other students a little while ago. If you're not prepared, it you can just hear it through the radio.
Mm-hmm.
You just can. Mm. Or even TV. I've seen some TV people that don't have the knowledge of what they should have to talk about a subject, and they're trying to get their way through for another 45 seconds before they take a break.
Yeah.
And they're struggling, and it's like, really, this is not good. You know, sometimes you're thrown into it, the fire, and you don't have that preparation time. But you have, you know.
And then you'd have to be able to think on your feet.
Well, I don't know how much time you got left or not, but I did TV weather one time for Steve Feldy, and went through the whole process of how we can do the weather on TV, and I stood in front of that green wall, which I see you've got one out here.
Yeah.
And it came time live on TV and pushed the button, and there was no screen. Nothing came up, but here I am standing in front of a green wall. Mm. And I'm trying to push that button to get the next screen to show the map of the United States. Nothing would come up for 3 minutes.
Yeah.
So all of my ad-libbing ability and my geography knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I started pointing down here would be San Diego, if you could see San Diego, and I'm looking at the camera.
And up here in Freezer Butt, Minnesota.
Freezer Butt, Minnesota.
Yeah. It's really cold.
It was really cold up there today. And I ad-libbed my way through. Now, that's my radio coming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, any other TV person, it would freeze up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'd be like, cut back to, you know.
Yeah, and send it back to the anchor. Yeah. Right. You know, but I just turned it into a soft shoe tap dance for 3 minutes and got through it, you know. So that's the one only time I did weather on television.
And you don't want to see him dance, I promise.
No.
Yeah. It's funny that the weather fiasco, that's the same reason why I didn't want to do TV. It's the weather. They put me on weather, and I was like, I can't do that. This ain't going to work out.
But if I didn't know geography, I'd be a mess up there.
Yeah, as you see, we have a lot of green over here, and followed by green. Yeah.
Geography is not her favorite topic.
Not at all.
Yeah. When I was studying aviation, they had us looking at a lot of maps. So it's I know local and a little bit. And then history as the geography aspect.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to thank you guys for coming on. This has been an absolute delight. You guys are very insightful, and the fact that it doesn't, like, I would ask a question, and then you guys would go into full detail, and then give me life advice afterward, it's probably the highlight guest of my whole career so far, so thank you so much.
Listen, it's not scripted,
dude.
Either.
It's not scripted. I had stuff written down, and then it's set to the side.
You know what? I didn't see you refer to it very often.
The only thing that would cause me worry is if this were still a highlight, like, tomorrow. but this is not going to be the highlight of your career, no. Wyatt.
Yeah,
you've got big things ahead, and we wish you the
all
best.
All
the best to you.
Thank you so much, guys.
It's a great business, and if you get in it, you're going to be very happy with it.
Yeah. So, is there anything you guys are working on you want to plug or talk about? I know the St. Patty's Day Parade and it got canceled, but anything else?
That was another highlight, I think, of your career.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Dorsey.
We can.
Sad to see that.
I can extend it a little bit if you want to talk about it.
The St. Patrick's Parade was always my baby. I love doing that. Teddy Bear Clinic, I've done at Blessing Reiman.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of things when you're here as long as I've been, and you know, you get involved in the community, you kind of come up with ideas and things to do. I had no idea either one of those would be over 30 years in length.
Uh-huh. Right.
They're continuing to do, but there was an idea that clicked, and it's still going on. Very proud of both of those.
Mm-hmm.
The nurses out of Blessing Reiman have taken over the whole logistics of it
for
the Teddy Bear Clinic, which is, you know, fine with me. But, you know, they've turned it into a part of their curriculum out there.
Yeah.
Oh.
So that may be.
It's about leaving your mark.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you have to.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you're dealing with the community. You try to make the community better. You try to involve people in what's going on in their neighborhoods. And when some things like that click, you look back and say, yeah, it was well worth doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was a good run.
Yeah, it was.
It was a good run.
Very much.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys again. This has been
great.
And thank you all for listening. Check us out next time on QU Podcast. Thank you. Hey, before you go, this is your host, Wyatt Randolph, again. Just wanted to give a little fun fact about radio in connection to Quincy University. Quincy University actually had a radio station previously. It was known originally as WWQC when it first started in 1948 in the main building of Francis Hall. And later it was known as WQUB. And it was widely popular in the community, and unfortunately that popularity and growth brought with it a lot of expenses. And so the school kept trying to find ways to run it more cost-effectively, which ultimately ended in it being sold to a company in St. Louis. And there was not radio here at Quincy for a while. The tower is still located behind North Campus. And radio kind of moved to the podcast format here at North Campus. So we're kind of continuing on that tradition of broadcasting and news, journalism. And I hope this episode kind of helped highlight the connection to the community that radio can bring, and hope this little history fact was important to someone. So thank you for listening. Have a great day. Check out more podcasts at QUmedia.com.